In a suburban Washington, D.C. living room in the early 1900s, Catherine Cook Briggs transformed her home into what she called a cosmic laboratory of baby training. After losing several children to illness, Catherine channeled her grief into an obsessive study of child development, using her surviving daughter, Isabel, as her primary subject. She meticulously documented Isabel's responses to behavioral drills, rewarding success with magical storytelling sessions. This wasn't just maternal attention. It was the beginning of what would become a $2 billion global industry spanning 26 countries. Have you ever wondered which of 16 personality types you might be? The four-letter codes of the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, MBTI, have become so embedded in our culture that many describe it as, like my religion, a framework through which they understand themselves and others. Yet this ubiquitous tool began with a grieving mother who distributed detailed questionnaires to neighborhood parents, asking whether their children were placid or intense, and organized or spontaneous. These crude categorizations laid the groundwork for what would eventually become the world's most popular personality assessment, taken by over 2 million people annually. Catherine's life transformed when she discovered Carl Jung's personality theories in a New Republic review. After years of depression following Isabel's departure for college, Jung's ideas revitalized her abandoned personality project. She embraced his work as her Bible and created a personality paintbox, a 2x2 grid that became the precursor to the 16-type MBTI table. What drew Catherine most powerfully to Jung was his promise of a coherent individual who could master their own life. Fascinated by intuition, she boldly wrote to Jung himself, asking why he'd called it the noblest gift of man. To her surprise, he responded, explaining intuition as perception that could see through walls and round corners and into the deepest obscurities of the human heart. Her fascination evolved into obsession. She wrote fiction about Jung, including an erotic novella about a depressed man saved by a Jungian analyst, and when publishers rejected it, composed songs and hymns celebrating him. Meanwhile, Isabel had pursued writing, winning a mystery novel contest before focusing on family life. The stage was set for mother and daughter to channel their creative energies into something that would outlast them both. As World War II approached, Isabel transformed her mother's theoretical work into something practical. After Pearl Harbor, she adapted Catherine's Jungian questionnaire into a prototype test matching people's gifts to different professions. She named it Form A of the Briggs-Myers Type Indicator, placing her mother's surname first to honor Catherine's foundational work. Unlike other psychological assessments focusing on pathology, Isabel's test was positively framed, stating, "This is not, strictly speaking, a test at all. Each type has its own special advantages." She priced it affordably at 50 cents for a test booklet and 5 cents each for an answer sheet and personality profile card. Isabel's first client wasn't a corporation, but the Office of Strategic Services, America's wartime intelligence agency. Murray's team wanted to match covert operatives to suitable secret missions. Isabel believed that introverted sensing, IS types, made perfect intelligence agents due to their complete, realistic, practical respect for the facts. OSS recruits encountered the test in unusual settings, arriving at an unmarked Washington, D.C. schoolhouse where they would surrender identifying possessions, change into army fatigues, receive a code name, and be transported to a country estate known only as Station S. During the 1950s, Isabel transformed from housewife to entrepreneur as owner of Briggs-Myers Type Research. Personality testing swept through corporate America, with 60% of companies using such assessments by 1956. Isabel marketed the indicator as a personnel management tool, claiming employees in type-favored jobs performed better and stayed longer. Her growing confidence led her to test 5,355 medical students across 42 institutions. Her research revealed intuitive types excelled on MCATs through quick gut reactions, while sensing types performed better clinically and were more likely to practice in rural areas. Isabel's pursuit of scientific legitimacy faltered when she approached the Educational Testing Service, ETS, creators of the SAT. Though founder Henry Chauncey initially saw potential in the Briggs-Myers type indicator, ETS psychometricians viewed Isabel with skepticism, resenting pressure to validate what they called preconceived and popular but naive notions of non-researchers. The relationship deteriorated when researchers discovered statistical problems. Isabel had claimed the indicator was based on bimodality, two distinct peaks for opposed personality types. Testing revealed most people actually clustered in the middle between these theoretical extremes. By the mid-1960s, ETS had moved on from the indicator, bearing scars from the MBTI escapade. Facing cancer, Isabel found an unexpected ally in Mary McCauley, a University of Florida psychologist. Together, they established the Center for the Applications of Psychological Type, CAPT, expanding into family therapy and marital enrichment. Their research showed people typically married someone sharing two or three type preferences, suggesting unconscious attraction to similar traits while maintaining enough differences for growth. When Isabel was 75, her daughter Anne died from an embolism after routine surgery. Devastated, Isabel found solace through intense work on the indicator and religious meditation, despite her worsening cancer. The transition to consulting psychologists' press dramatically expanded the indicator's reach. Unlike ETS's cautious approach, CPP aggressively marketed the test and introduced a self-scoring version. CPP's revenues grew from $10,000 in 1975 to $100,000 in 1979, with over 1 million answer sheets sold, establishing the MBTI as a mainstream assessment tool. Isabel died in 1980, but her creation transformed from a psychological assessment into a mass cultural phenomenon. By the early 2000s, over 2 million people annually took the MBTI, making it the world's most widely used personality inventory. The MBTI thrives through certification programs costing thousands that consistently sell out. Participants from diverse fields wear name tags with their four-letter types, often leading with these codes when introducing themselves. Why does the MBTI persist despite academic criticism calling it unreliable? Test-retest reliability can be as low as 50%, with many people receiving different classifications upon retaking. Yet its popularity continues because it offers painless self-knowledge in a neat 4x4 chart rather than requiring difficult self-excavation. The MBTI's appeal stems from its ability to reflect whatever version of yourself you wish to see while maintaining scientific legitimacy. The questionnaire's pattern becomes quickly apparent, allowing subtle self-steering toward desired outcomes. This isn't manipulation. People genuinely want to discover their true self, and the test encourages comfortable self-reflection. In our increasingly complex world, Myers-Briggs offers something precious: the illusion of self-knowledge without the pain of genuine self-examination. It provides a structured, non-judgmental language for discussing personality differences. Nearly a century after Katherine Briggs transformed her living room into a personality laboratory, millions still eagerly sort themselves into 16 tidy boxes, perhaps the most successful mother-daughter project in history.